Following is a one-minute introduction, which will be followed by the treatment. To find out about the founding of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, which was founded in 1988 by William and Helen Wright, please navigate to the menu, which is in the top left corner of every page, and select About, which is near the bottom of the menu. If you would like to contact us in a private, secure manner, please send a message which is obtained from clicking on the Contact button, which is next to the About selection at the bottom area of the menu. This is the end of the introduction. The extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute follows. The title to the Mary Baker Eddy Institute extemporaneous prayer treatment is Evil, Depravity, Swamp Drain. No matter what the title is to any prayer treatment, a wonderful place to begin are the three introductory quotes at the beginning of the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. The first one is from the words of Jesus posted by John, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." The second one by Shakespeare, "There is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." Quote number three is by Mary Baker Eddy, and she basically combines what the result will be if we combine number one and two. "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." And of course, the thou, thy, and the thou at the end all refers to God. No matter what the topic, we always want to be looking for, and to the best of our inspiration at the moment, understand the truth that we find in little bits here and there that relate to the topic. Since God is infinite, we are free from any limitation in proportion to the degree at which we discover and understand truth. We want to make sure that we have a filter on our consciousness so that the only things we permit into our consciousness are parcels, jewels, precepts of truth. If we let anything else into our consciousness, it is much more difficult to get it out than it is to be lax and let it enter. What do you think Mary Baker Eddy means when she says, "Thou hast heard my prayer"? The Bible indicates we should pray without ceasing. One way that seems logical as a method to do that is to consider prayer as the way we live our life, because we're doing that every moment. If we live our life in the manner in which we would like to accomplish some good activity, then it will be accomplished. Because perseverance works wonderful things when we utilize the structure and system, which is part of divine principle, keeping everything in balance and harmonious, and of course administering the atmosphere of love in everything we do. Because that's really the ointment or the lubricant, the spiritual inspiration that enables everything to work together. It enables the network of the intelligence, wisdom, and knowing of mind and the substance of spirit and the identity of spiritual sense, which is our sight, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling, to work with divine principle. And of course, life is living the qualities of God. And because spirit is the only substance, the only kind of life we could ever be living to make progress in our spiritual advancement is spiritual living. That means we must filter everything properly before we embark on it and be sure that we have a spiritual motive and that everyone involved is blessed by the activities that we may have a part in. Any way we have an influence must be a spiritual, wholesome influence. Jesus states that when we think about something, that is basically tantamount to doing it, because we have it in consciousness, and whether we're physically doing it or mentally doing it, either way, it is doing it. Considering quote number 3 again, that certainly does enable us to be praying without ceasing. And if we are striving to do good activities, activities that will bless everyone that's involved, then we are aligning ourselves with the 7 synonymous terms, which are the primary qualities of God: mind, spirit, soul, principle, life. And truth I didn't mention, but truth is motive. And our motive is really the engine behind anything that we do in a court of law. They're always looking for the motive. And if they don't find a motive, they don't feel that the individual without a motive could be involved. So that's one of the first things that someone would look for in trying to prove something. Now, it's the same thing in the system of divine metaphysics. Mary Baker Eddy gives us a clue on page 146 just how important it is to realize that Christian Science is a system. She states, "Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. And on page 330, she gives us this statement. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. So for the pages between 330 and 340, she provides 32 topics and tells us in a very direct manner exactly what we need to understand in order to establish a solid platform upon which we can stand to build our infinite progression, striving for concrete being. If we have a plank that is missing, then we have a problem. We must have all 32 planks covered in order for our platform to be unified and strong. What is the system to which Mary Baker Eddy refers? We explain it in our prayer treatments on a continuous basis. We have almost 400 prayer treatments, and many of them give substantial insight into exactly what the system comprises. Now, there are 7 synonymous terms for God, and we could consider those the building blocks, the bases, just like math has 10 digits, 0 through 9. But those by themselves don't do much good. If we don't utilize the 10 digits, we're not going to get any product in mathematics. If we don't utilize the 7 synonymous terms for God, we're not going to have any kind of a product in the system of divine metaphysics. The 7, of course, are included in the 2 definitions of God, one on page 465, which is the chapter on recapitulation, which is a summary of chapters 1 through 13, and it states as the very first question in a 24 question and answer series, what is God? God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. On 587 in the glossary, she provides the same 7 synonymous terms, but in a little different order, and she emphasizes some other words than the ones in the first definition. The first definition, she emphasized the words incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite. And incorporeal, of course, means there is no body. So it is invisible. God is invisible. So incorporeal is a very important thing to understand because we can't see, we can't touch, feel, or taste God. Of course, with Jesus, he was in human form, so he obviously could not be God, because he is not incorporeal. Divine refers to perfection. That is a word used commonly in the English language. If someone refers to something as divine, they're talking about something that is really tops, perfect. Supreme means it's above everything else. Think of a supreme ruler. if there were a king that was the supreme king over all of planet Earth. And of course, that's exactly what God is. God is supreme over everything and everyone. God is, obviously, number one, and the only, and all. So he's omni, and therefore he is one, only, and all about every quality that there is that could be attributed to God. So the second definition on 587 in the glossary states that God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, intelligence. Every word in that definition, which is in addition to the seven synonymous terms for God, are part of the words that describe the seven synonymous terms, just as incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite did in the first definition. Now, on that same page is the definition of good, and it is defined as God, Spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. Omniscience includes omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, omni-knowing. Everything about God is omni, and omni means one, only, and all. So there's no competition or opposition to God that is real, because God is all there is. There is nothing but God. Everything else that appears to be something besides God is merely a manifestation of God. And remember, God is good, so anything that appears to be evil, such as what is in the title to this prayer treatment, is not real, but only a suggestion which is trying to mock the truth. It's trying to deceive one into believing that there is reality in something besides good. Following are some of the definitions from 587, in addition to the ones already provided, that can be helpful in deciphering just how do we handle evil, and how do we actually drain a swamp that appears to be all evil? And what is depravity all about? On page 584, the word devil is defined as evil, a lie, error, neither corporeality nor mind, the opposite of truth, a belief in sin, sickness, and death, animal magnetism or hypnotism, the lust of the flesh, which saith, I am life and intelligence in matter. There is more than one mind, for I am mind, a wicked mind, self-made or created by a tribal god and put into the opposite of mind, termed matter, thence to reproduce a mortal universe, including man, not after the image and likeness of spirit, but after its own image. Now, what is man? On page 591, the same section, which is the glossary, man is defined as the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. Now, what does the Bible say about man? There are two very opposing statements about man. One is the spiritual record, and the other is its opposite. The first one begins in Genesis chapter 1 at verse 26, and it says, "And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." So God created man in his image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. And God blessed them. And God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. Now, there's more text there, but that covers the part that is pertinent to this particular prayer treatment. So, in the glossary, Mary Baker Eddy certainly defines man as being the same man that is defined in the Bible. And of course, Mary Baker Eddy's primary resource, other than spiritual inspiration from direct hearing of God's dictation, is the Bible. In fact, she says that was her only reference. Now, she obviously had a lot of other references, but as far as learning the truth, it's in the Bible. One just needs to understand how to interpret it. Because there's a lot of humans that were involved in writing things down, and there are extended periods of time in which they had no way to record it in written fashion. And so, you know what happens when one individual tells something to another one, and then they tell it to someone else, and they tell it to another party. In fact, there's a game about that, where one writes down a sentence, and they give it to one of the individuals at the head of the line, and they pass it on down, not the paper with it written on, but what they remember about it. And when it gets down to the end of the line, they write down what they heard and compare it to the piece of paper of what the first one was told to say. And wow, it's like the opposite. Now, Genesis 2 gives a completely different story. It talks about Adam and Eve. Lots of problems about the man that is discussed in Genesis chapter 2. Which one are we going to believe? They cannot both be true. If anyone has ever said we were all born sinners, they're obviously ignoring the spiritual record that is in Genesis chapter 1. And they're relying on what is in Genesis chapter 2. Have you ever heard of anyone you know of that came from a man? Genesis chapter 2 says that they took a rib from Adam and made woman. That's got to be a real trick. At the very beginning of chapter 2, it says, and there went up a mist, M-I-S-T. I've been in a fog so thick you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. If you want clarity in understanding something, you better not have a heavy mist in front of you. That's why we want to rely on the spiritual record, because it doesn't say anything about a mist. In fact, it says the opposite. At the very beginning, it says the very first thing God did was create light. That's before he created the sun and the moon and anything else that's up in the sky. I would rather start with Genesis chapter 1 and rely on that as my source than anything in chapter 2. If chapter 2 were true, we are doomed forever. But we're not doomed forever, because Jesus showed us the way out of the belief that's in Genesis chapter 2. And that's what we want to focus on. The way Jesus viewed life as spiritual. Because that's the only true life there is. That's the only true source there is. Mary Baker Eddy says, in the beginning, which are the first three words, is spiritually translated as in the only. In other words, the only creation there is. There isn't another one. There's only one. And she further defines, translates, and explains that there can never be a creation of anything if it's true. Because whatever is true has always been true. And the Bible states there is nothing new under the sun. So could there be a creation? No. Whatever is true has always been true. That means there can never be a creation of anything. There can only be a revelation. We can get a new revelation that we didn't realize existed. But nothing can be created. Everything always has been. And it's only our understanding has increased to give us new revelations. Additional revelations, additional facts about God, and God's idea, image and likeness, which is man. And man is a generic term which really means male and female. The qualities that we would think of as being female qualities, such as love, which would be like nurturing, bringing something to fulfillment. And male, we think of things such as strength, courage, things along that line. And in the prayer, the Lord's Prayer by Jesus, where he says, "Our Father which art in heaven," she says, "Our Father, Mother God." Did we come from somewhere? Yes, we came from the consciousness. What is referred to as a birth is really a bringing forth to awareness of what always has been true. We have always been a spiritual idea, an image and likeness of God, of God's qualities. One can study the spiritual record of creation frontwards and backwards and inside out, top to bottom. And there won't be anything they can find that aligns with man being evil. It's not there. It just is not in existence. And when I read that definition of evil, there's nothing in there that I would want to be reflecting. If I were conscious of what was happening, there's nothing there that is worth reflecting. We want to be reflecting what is under the qualities of the real man that is the image and likeness of God. That is what we want to be reflecting. Solomon is the son of David, the one that slew Goliath. And he felt very inadequate to be king when he succeeded his father, King David. And so he asked God for the wisdom to judge his people fairly. That's all he asked for. But what did he get in return? He received the wisdom to do what he had asked for, and in addition, he received every kind of material convenience and wealth that could be imagined. Can we have that same discipline? Can we be interested in the well-being of other people instead of ourselves? Can we live a life, can we cultivate a life of giving? Cultivate a life of loving? Because loving is giving. Giving is loving. Taking is evil and hating. It is fear, thinking that there's not enough good to go around. So we better grab everything we can now, if not yesterday. Big mistake. Very big mistake. We do not want to live a life of taking. We do not want to submit to fear of lack. What do you think is the best way to overcome lack? What's the opposite of lack? Lack is believing that you don't have something that you need. What would happen if you started giving away something that you thought you needed? You couldn't possibly do it unless you had elevated your thought to the point that you believe that you don't lack anything that you need. Because you cannot both have and lack. And the amount that we have is confined to our own thought. God is infinite mind. Incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind. Infinite spirit. Infinite soul. Infinite principle. Infinite life. Infinite truth. Infinite love. Mind is the source of ideas. Could God be limited in any way when it says that God is infinite? Do you have any trouble thinking about being your favorite place that you could think of that you would like to be? How long does it take to get there? Time's not involved. You can instantly be there by just thinking about it. Frederick L. Rawson, a genius of an electrical engineer, people came to him from all over the world to solve their problems, and this was over 100 years ago when it was very difficult to travel internationally. Depending on where one was, it might take them a month or more just to get to where he was, and then a month or more to get back. He developed the understanding to realize that there is no time. How did he prove it? He healed back in time so that the healing was effective when the individual that was involved first recognized that he had a problem. Didn't matter how many years it was. Could be 5 minutes, or it could be 5 years or 5 decades. Yeah. It could be 50 years ago. He may have had a problem at birth and came to see him when he was 55 years old. He realized he had a problem when he was 5 years old. All of the aggravation the individual went through for 50 years would be erased from consciousness. He said, from a material standpoint, which of course is the false record of creation, he said, our life is like a movie. What part of it do we want to look at? We could view any part of it that we're willing to view it if we had the spiritual understanding that Mr. Rawson had. He healed over 500 cases of going back in time. He wrote a book, Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. In it, in the chapter on applied treatment, he describes 1,315 different ailments and the exact truth that heals the problem. And that's exactly what Mary Baker Eddy said we needed to do. We needed to dig and find what evil it is that supposedly created the problem. Belief. Obviously, it's a belief. And then we have to declare that there is nothing true about the belief. And then we declare what is true about the situation. Now, we can't just say a few words and it's all over. We have to develop an understanding. And that's what love is. That's what nurturing it is. It's nurturing our understanding of mind and spirit and soul and principle, life, truth and love. And love represents wholeness, completeness, fulfillment. And when we get enough clarification in our understanding, the healing is automatic. And the less we think about the problem, the sooner the healing comes forth. Because we can't think about the problem and make progress, because they're opposites. Limitation and infinite are opposites. A problem is finite. But God is infinite. The truth about man is infinite, because God is infinite. The formula is simple. Executing it is a matter of individual willingness and inspiration to give up old beliefs. And we do that automatically as we transform thought by replacing old beliefs with actual facts about who we are and who God is. Because, of course, we need to know God in order to know ourselves, because we are a reflection of God. We cannot know man unless we know God. Mary Baker Eddy says we are barraged constantly with evil suggestions that try to throw us off track. She says it's extremely important to establish a model in thought and stick to it. As we advance, we're probably going to want to modify that model. We might start off with a very simple model with only a few words. And as we get a greater and greater comprehensive understanding of what God is, then we may want to enhance our description of the model to be more comprehensive. Richard Strain was at the end of his rope. He was working 18 hours a day. He got home and turned around and went back to work 6 hours later. And in that time, he had to eat dinner, whatever he did to prepare for sleeping, maybe take a shower, whatever. Slept whatever hours he could, probably 4 or 5. Then prepared for the day and ate breakfast and was out the door. And he was in a rat race. He didn't feel he was making any progress in his life. He had been a lifelong Christian Scientist, but he got in this rut and he couldn't seem to see any daylight. So he went to a Christian Science practitioner. And after he told her, same kind of thing that I've recited here, she said, "When do you study?" "Never. I have no time." She said, "If you don't study 5 hours a day, you will not be able to get out of the rut that you're in right now." Boy, the wheels started turning. He had smoke coming out of his ears. He must have. He doesn't say that. He's a listed author on the website. And this, he recited this experience. And it's on the website in an audio form. He had to figure out, how can I do this? How can I possibly do it? How can I take 5 out of the 6 hours I'm home and use it for studying? I need to eat, shower, sleep, get up, eat again. How can I do it? He didn't say this out loud. I'm just reiterating what I'm thinking. He may have been contemplating. Because the practitioner didn't say any other words. At least he didn't report anything else that she said. She said just those two things. When do you study? And if you don't study 5 hours a day, you're not going to get out of your problem. He finally said, okay, I'm going to do it. He didn't say he was thinking about it or he was going to think about it. He didn't say he was going to make a decision at some future time or day or whatever. He said, I'm going to do it. He made the commitment in front of her and said he was going to do it. Sometime later, he reported back to her, and he said, by the end of the first week, there was enough improvement in my efficiency that I didn't need to be gone 18 hours. And he apparently started it the next day. But that's how he conducted himself. He said, by the end of the week, I had time to study 6 hours without a problem. Or 5 hours, excuse me. He started the next day. So I guess he only had 1 hour sleep or less if he did any eating or preparing for sleeping or whatever. In fact, maybe he didn't sleep at all. If he ate two meals and showered and redressed for fresh clothes, he may not have gone to bed at all the first night. But he made the commitment. And in front of someone that he respected. So he had to do it. So by the end of the week, he was able to schedule 5 hours a day without a problem. Later on, he was a popular speaker at the churches. Do we have the gana, the intestinal fortitude, to make a commitment and follow through with it? In my individual definition of a genius, that is a genius. Because very few people do it. Probably far less than 1%. Probably more like a tenth or a hundredth of 1%. Very few people, percentage-wise or decimal-wise, do it. They just don't do it. They do not follow through with any kind of commitment. Do we want to go somewhere in our life that is better than where we are right now? It's all based on having a better understanding of God and a better understanding of who we are as God's image and likeness. We have no limit except what we impose on ourselves or accept the limit from some outside suggestion. If we are made in the image and likeness of God, as it states in Genesis chapter 1, then it doesn't come from the outside as truth. There can't be anything opposed to truth that is real, because truth is real. That's what truth is. Truth is reality. Everything that is unlike truth is a mistake. It's error. Anything unlike good is evil. The seven synonymous terms are the basic elements. So what do we do with them? Well, there are four operators. In math, there are four operators that are called add, subtract, multiply, and divide. In the system of divine metaphysics, the operators are labeled the Word, the Christ, Christianity, and science. The Word means all the facts about God. The Christ means exactly what Jesus did when he saw somebody that had a problem. He translated what was visibly apparent to the truth about the real man as being the perfect image and likeness of God. No problem, no ailment, not sinful, sick, diseased, and not dead. He had to see them whole, complete, perfect. Einstein says you cannot solve a problem if you're working on the same level as where the problem appeared. That's the third element of the system of divine metaphysics, is the level of consciousness. So getting back to the operators, the Christ means that we are translating from the visible, sickly, sinful, or dead subject to what it states in the spiritual record in Genesis chapter 1. God made man in his image and after his likeness. But remember what it says before that. It says, let us make man in the image and likeness of God. Do you think you may need to make a little effort? Do you think you may need to open your consciousness to the truth about who you really are, based on what it says in Genesis chapter 1? Jesus had a little problem healing in the area of Galilee where he was born and raised, because people thought of him as not being something special. In fact, if anything, as being weird. Or they thought of him as being a boy or maybe a carpenter, because he was in the carpentry trade his adult life until age 30. They did not think of him as anything special that could actually perform healings. So he had to leave Galilee, because they didn't have their thought open to being transformed from the problem they had to not having the problem. On one occasion, I remember the story about the, I think it was the blind man. Jesus asked, do you believe that you can be healed? Jesus wanted to have a positive attitude coming from the individual that needed to be healed. Is our thought open to improving what we see as a visible situation? Is our conviction, our commitment to overcoming the problem strong enough that we are willing to give up even a little bit of the false evidence that seems to be appearing real to us of whatever the problem seems to be? We could have a sinful bad habit. We could have a lack of anything that we think we need. Do we think we're not smart enough to figure something out? What is omni-intelligent? Not man. God. God is omni-intelligent. Man has the ability to reflect the intelligence of God. All capacity, all faculty is in mind. To the degree that we open our thought to an improved view, that's the degree to which we will open our consciousness and to the revelation and inspiration that will enlighten us to the truth about ourselves that it states in Genesis chapter 1. Do we want to be better? Do we want to overcome false beliefs? We have to have the commitment that Richard Strain had. He didn't know how he was going to do it, but he was going to make the commitment because he didn't see any other solution. Do you need to gain more faith that there is a solution? Read pages 600 to 700 in the textbook. That is 100 pages relating healings of 86 people that had healings of 400. No, I think it's 85 people that had 486 healings. Each one had something around 6 healings apiece. I think it was like 5.7 healings apiece. They've all been verified. Those were all in the Science and Health final edition. The final edition. Mary Baker Eddy wanted to make sure that she had a record in a book that was going to be distributed worldwide to millions and millions of people that had proof that what she was teaching in the textbook was true. It was true. It wasn't a theory. It was true. And we have a button in the header, which is the top part of every page of our website, that says, heal everything. We give specific instructions on what anyone needs to do to heal any problem that arises. It's not to read a few words. It's not to go to a Christian Science practitioner and tell them about your problem and expecting them to heal it. It is giving you the step-by-step instructions on how to do it without the help of another individual. Go to a medical doctor. Ask him if he can give you a book that if you understood it, it would heal your problem. Go to any medical doctor in the world and see what they will give you as an answer. I can guarantee you there's not a single instruction in there that talks about using a scalpel or any kind of a cutting instrument or any kind of an x-ray machine or these med beds they're supposed to be coming out with that will do something with your electrical system. God is above anything that is physical, because God is spirit. The only real substance is spirit, and spirit is flawless. Flawless. So if you get in tune with your real substance, voila, you have the healing. I can't tell you how much effort that will take, because that's an individual salvation. We can tell you how to do it, and we know it works. And Mary Baker Eddy has 486 examples that it did work. In fact, we have more tools available, and what we recommend is more than what she did. And you'll have to read it from our website. We give you complete instructions, A to Z, of what you need to do. Now, if you were a C student in school, and I don't care what grade you look at, or maybe it's graduate school or postgraduate work, if you're a C student, just an average student, you're going to have to learn that that's not the solution to life. You've got to be above what you have accepted as a standard for yourself, as being just average, just being a sheep that follows some leader somewhere. No, you have to be a thinker. You have to be someone that is really interested in developing a sovereignty with your life, just like the 85 people in those 100 pages did. They had to make a decision. They were fed up with what they'd been putting up with their problem. In Mary Baker Eddy's early days, she would let a student write a letter to her and tell her if they had a problem that they didn't seem to be able to solve, whether it was for themselves or a patient that they had, if they were a practitioner. And one letter came in that said she was having problem with vision and didn't seem to be able to find a solution. Mary Baker Eddy said, "Can you focus no matter what comes your way?" That was what Mary Baker Eddy was interested in. Can she focus no matter what evil tries to present itself? Wentworth Winslow, who healed a boy from death, the belief of death, he said, "Imagine yourself in a room, and the only thing in the room is a telephone and a radio." And this was about 75 years ago he said this. So it's probably before television. That's about the time television came out. But anyway, he said a radio and a telephone. And he said, "Imagine that telephone is ringing, 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 a very annoying ring. And the radio was tuned in to station KOG, Kingdom of God. So you know what was being announced on the radio. all the qualities of God, such as some of the definitions that I read to you or recited to you. It was talking about God, heaven, perfection, the perfect man that was a reflection of God. That's all the radio did. What should you do with the telephone? Should you pick it up and let air scream in your ear? Try to convince you that you were going to die, or you were going to be sick for the rest of your life, or whatever the problem, whatever the suggestion is. I mean, evil can come up with all kinds of all kinds of suggestions. Let me read to you what it says on page 115 about the word that is in the topic called depravity. This is page 115 of the textbook, and it's under Scientific Translation of Mortal Mind. It says first degree depravity, unreality, physical evil beliefs, passions and appetites, fear, depraved will, self-justification, pride, envy, deceit, hatred, revenge, sin, sickness, disease, death. That is the lowest level of thought. That's it. That's the bottom of the barrel. That's called the first degree of translation of mortal mind. And the next two are higher. Second degree is called evil beliefs disappearing, and third degree is called understanding. And then the highest is scientific translation of immortal mind. And of course there you can imagine what the topic is. Three levels are mortal mind, and the top level is immortal mind. It's on the website. If you look it up, you will have an idea of the four levels of consciousness. And obviously, we want to keep our thought on as high a level as we can even understand what the words mean. But they are divine. Remember, I mentioned that the word divine means perfect. They're all perfect. Page 115 and 116. It's on the website. The four levels of consciousness. Who is going to drain the swamp? What is going to drain the swamp? How can the swamp be drained? When? Where is it? Under what conditions can the swamp be drained? We've been talking about consciousness. What do you think needs to be done in order to drain the swamp? God is omnipresent, and God is all good. So where can the swamp be? To belief, it is right beside heaven. It is mocking heaven. It is trying to deceive consciousness to believe that it is real and heaven is a fake. Everything is like Shakespeare says. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. So that's where the swamp is. In our thought. In the thought of anyone that is thinking swampy thoughts. If you're thinking thoughts of depravity, you're in the swamp. Because that's where the thoughts are. In fact, that's what the swamp is. It is thoughts of depravity. When is it there? Whenever we let our thought slip down to depravity. It was mentioned that Jesus said that whatever we're thinking is what we are. That's what we do. We do what we're thinking about. We see what we're thinking about. We feel, taste, smell what we're thinking about. Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Are we searching for the truth? Or are we searching for some kind of depravity? Our thoughts determine our experience. Our life is a play out of our thought, our motive. All thought, speech, and action comes from motive, from thought. Two different people can look at the same object. It could be an individual they're looking at, or it could be a painting, a statue, a building. They can be going to a balloon event where they've got all these beautiful, colorful balloons up in the air. They could be on an airplane 35,000 feet in the air. Or they could be in a military fighter jet that goes much higher and much faster. They could be in a rocket. They could be in a car race, a motorcycle race. They could be walking. They could be riding a bicycle. They could be running. They could be sleeping. They can be thinking when they're sleeping. It's common for people to dream. I never seem to have a dream, but most people have dreams. Our life is formed from our thoughts. And if we want to be careful about what we put into our consciousness, and put only wholesome thoughts in there, we're going to be having a wholesome life. We're going to be having a life of progress. We're going to be on the path of infinite progression, striving for concrete being. Everyone has the same opportunity. I don't care what the color of your skin is, or where you're located, what the weather is, who your parents were, what education you had. None of it matters. Nothing matters except truth. If you have the desire, the gana, the internal intestinal fortitude, you can make any transformation to your life that you desire to do. And if it's going to be for the good, then the laws of God, which are infinite in power, are going to be right there supporting what you're doing. When Mary Baker Eddy said, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer and I am blessed," I do not believe she was talking about talking to God with words in a verbal fashion. I believe she was talking about how she was living her life. And she was realizing that living her life in alignment with the laws of God brought blessings, and she was overflowing with gratitude. And she was realizing that God is omnipresent. She says, "Thou here and everywhere. That is thy high behest. Thou here and everywhere." Do we want to pray without ceasing? Do we want to live our life the way we would like for our life to be? Can we sleep 18 hours a day and be up 6 and get really so much done? Do we want to be in bed 24 hours a day? Do we want to be an invalid? Some people want to be an invalid because they want other people to wait on them. I know of a case where somebody was in bed and they told the nurse, "You know, I could get out of here any time I wanted to and just go about my regular business." Are we an invalid in our thinking? Are we accepting a problem as being real without even making an effort to improve our thought and educate ourselves about what Genesis really means when it says that God made man in his image and likeness? Do we really want to know what it means when he said, "Let us do it," before he does it? Do you think Jesus was lying when the record about him was that he had problems in Galilee because no one had any confidence that they could be healed by someone that used to be a carpenter? It's up to you and me. Everyone has to work out their own salvation. I can't work out yours. You can't work out mine. We have to make a decision internally what we want to do with our life. Do we want to drain the swamp in our consciousness? When it says that God is incorporeal and that man is made in God's image and likeness, how can we think of a man or a woman or a child as being evil when it says in Genesis that they're made in God's image and likeness? How can we possibly justify thinking evil about a person? In fact, why are we thinking about a person? Jesus taught 41 parables and not a single one named a person. They spoke in impersonal ways. Impersonal. A certain man did this, or a certain son did this or that. Jesus did not think, talk, or act in a personal way. He thought, talked, and acted based on qualities. Qualities. A longtime friend of mine, excellent practitioner, she said one day, qualities, qualities, all is qualities. That's what God is. Qualities. You might want to dream about what you think God looks like. I don't know where it's going to get you. Because if you're trying to confine God to a physical appearance, how in the world could God be omnipresent? How could he be omnipresent if he is in a bodily form? There is not a single justification for saying that Jesus is God. Not a single one. A Pharisee asked Jesus, he said, "Good Master." And then he went ahead and asked him a question. And Jesus said, "Why call me good? There is only one good, and that is God." Mary Baker Eddy defines the word good as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. That tells us what good is. Jesus said, "I'm not good. Why calling me good? Why call me good? There is only one good, and that is God." When Jesus says, "I and my Father are one," that means his consciousness was in alignment with the consciousness of God. If we're thinking perfect thoughts, our consciousness is in alignment with the consciousness of God. Let me tell you real quick what the other two operators are. I mentioned the Word and the Christ. Christianity is utilizing what we understand about God and translating what appears to be a problem physically, or it could be mentally, and seeing the real individual in consciousness instead of as a physical body that has a problem, and demonstrating it, proving that we know enough about God and that we know how to get thought out of the hole of looking at it physically, translating it as did Jesus. Jesus saw the perfect man where others saw a sinning mortal man. And then Christianity is proving it by demonstrating it and bringing forth a healing. And the fourth operator is science. And science means that we have gained a level of understanding that we are automatically doing what Jesus did, translating such that the only thing we see is perfection. And therefore, we bring about instantaneous healing. And there's no time that lapses. Those are the four operators. And I mentioned the four levels, page 115 and 116. Please look at those carefully. And if you have a fear of living a life of giving, then read pages 600 to 700. If you have to, read it 10 times. Read it until you are convinced that yes, there is something there that gives me a reason to at least check it out. And if you start following our procedure that we recommend to be able to heal anything, I think you will find progress as soon as you embark on the journey. Mary Baker Eddy prayed every hour, I don't know, probably not more than a couple of minutes. She doesn't say how long. But every hour she prayed to make sure that she was not thinking anything other than totally perfect about anyone or anything. And she was attacked all the time. And when she passed on, everybody was a traitor. No one defended her. They took her picture out of the textbook the same day she passed on and republished the book the next day without her picture. Can you imagine? They had so much hate for her that they wanted to get her erased from thought of everyone. They forbid people to talk about her. They forbid people to do anything. I wasn't there. You know, it was 115 years ago, 1910. But I cannot imagine the students that received a CSD degree that they would be a sheep. And they all were. Every single one of them. They were so afraid of being excommunicated from the church that they let her name be dragged through the mud. Well, that's not the purpose of this recording, so we won't spend any more time on that other than those few words that were said, but we start with ourselves. That's where we drain the swamp. If everyone drained the swamp in their own consciousness, there would be no swamp to drain in any government or any corporation or any organization anywhere. Period. It wouldn't be there. And that's what we got to do. That's exactly where we start. That's exactly what Mary Baker Eddy was talking about when she said to her CSD students, you must make Christian Science known throughout the world. And if you don't, at some point you will be facing the darkest, longest, deepest, most intense dark ages that civilization has ever known. And that's where we are right now. That is exactly where we are right now. Actually, it was worse, much, much worse 6 months ago. Much worse. The progress that has been made in the last 6 months, we have on our website. We have a special page for it. Go to our home page. There's a button there where you can click and see the whole list of what's been accomplished since January 2025. Everything starts within consciousness. Everything. And not our friend's consciousness, not the first reader of the church, not somebody that is outside of yourself, not your wife, your husband, your children, your aunt, uncle, grandparents, not a friend. It starts within our individual consciousness, period. You go no further to look. Be the lighthouse. Be the shining example of what the textbook teaches. Be a shining example of following the way shower, Christ Jesus. We had three excellent Christian Scientists that had 15-minute appointments. I don't know for sure because I wasn't around 75 years ago, but I think that 15 minutes came from the 15, which includes the seven synonymous terms, the four operators, and the four levels of consciousness. Because that adds up to 15. The 7, 4, and 4. Now, whether they just said, hey, that's completeness, and I'm going to have an appointment for 15 minutes, and that's going to be complete. I don't know. I just thought of that this morning. That might be why they decided on 15-minute appointments. In fact, there was a recording of a prayer treatment only three or four days ago. And I said, I don't know why, a coincidence that they all came up with 15. And after I said that, I thought to myself, what does 15 mean? And of course, I well knew it, that it was the 7, 4, and 4, which is 15. So it came to me and I thought, wow, how naive I was that I didn't realize it as I was saying it. These treatments are all totally extemporaneous. Whatever comes out is what you hear. There is never an edit. You hear it exactly the way I hear it. Exactly. The first minute of this prayer treatment told you details on how you can contact us. And of course, you can click on the menu, and at the bottom of the menu, contact is one of the items listed. But we have a message system, and it's secure, and it's encrypted. So it's private. And the first minute of this prayer treatment indicated how we operate in communication. So if you have any questions, just listen to it again. I shall now recite to you one of the seven prayer treatments that Mary Baker Eddy gave to her CSD students, the ones that were certified as Doctorate of Christian Science. And that will be the conclusion of this prayer treatment. And then I will just record what the time and date is at the end for record-keeping purposes. So here is A Diapason of Heaven, the title given by Mary Baker Eddy, to a prayer treatment. And one will be selected out of the seven that ties in with this particular topic of this prayer treatment, which is evil, depravity, swamp drain. Here is The Diapason of Heaven by Mary Baker Eddy. The topic that has been chosen from the seven is for mind, because a lot of emphasis has been put on the importance of Shakespeare's quotation, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." So this is The Diapason of Heaven with a focus on mind by Mary Baker Eddy. We can declare often, divine mind is my mind, and my mind is God. God is my mind, and my mind is good. I have an intelligent mind, a good mind, a wise, perceptive, discerning mind, a clear mind, a joyous, happy mind. Mind is God, all acting, all wise, all loving, all knowing, all seeing. Divine mind is enthroned in my consciousness. Mortal mind and matter and personal sense are not enthroned. Ignorance and apathy and materiality are not enthroned in my consciousness. Good is my mind, and my mind is good. Mind is my God, and my mind is good. Divine mind is enthroned. This is the Word of God. Amen. It is July 28, 2025 at 14:25, Monday. This is the end of this extemporaneous prayer treatment. Thank you for listening.